Capricorn Rising, Preface. I will briefly note there may be confusion regarding whether this is an astrological textbook, a memoir, or autobiography. To clarify, it's simply a creation born of my desire to share my life thus far. Experiences, insights and learnings, hidden knowledge, and more importantly, how I've been able to cope with my allotted portion of life's difficulty using wisdoms gleaned from the symbolic lens of astrological language. This language was first revealed to me by my mother, and its secrets unlocked a world of profound amazement and confidence in the intelligent unfoldment of what we call the universe. Astrology is meaningful astronomy, using ancient archetypes to describe energetic forces at play in life, and most especially in your own awareness or consciousness. One's natal astrology describes the energies present at the moment of birth that can develop into patterns of instinctual response and more. I like to call this organized factor our psycho-spiritual DNA. In this little book, you'll get a glossary of astrological terms and a true life story to flesh out some of their meanings, along with exercises and journal prompts for you to learn or gain insight into your own astrology. Here I will describe the energies of the planets and signs of the zodiac using my own life as an example. It's probably not going to be a simple cookbook style of learning, but my hope is that as you read the pages and attempt the exercises, you get some personal aha moments of your own life's journey and how astrology can guide and inform you throughout. As I have navigated myself through my life's experiences and observed the synchronistic correspondence of the movement of our planets, sun and moon through the seasonal signs of the zodiac, I've become more and more in awe of the cycles of being and becoming indicated by the living energetic archetypes represented by astrology. I wish to share this with you. Chapter 1, Aries, I Am. Just like moon and like suns, with the certainty of tides, just like hopes springing high, still I'll rise. And still I rise, Maya Angelou, Aries sun. I'm standing outside my mother's locked bedroom door, listening to her sobbing. I am 6 years old and scared. I get down on the floor and lay my cheek on the cool tiles to peer under the wood frame, trying to see her, but she's out of sight. Her breathing is hoarse and raspy, and her crying sounds muffled, as if her face were in a pillow. She sounds desperate and alone. I rise, pull my short dress down over my scraped knees, and hug myself tightly. Just before the summer, our father had left us and not come back. Before he left, there were arguments that scared me, but not as badly as this. This is worse. This feels like the end of the world. The cold, hard stone of terror in my stomach feels like a knowing. Mom will leave us too. We will be all alone. I shout out to Mom through the door. I promise to make everything okay. I know how to make it better. I will be better. And after each sentence, I bang my closed hands against my thighs and stomp my bare feet on the floor. If she can just open the door and see me, she'll know what a big girl I am. I can take care of a lot. I will save us. I am strong and will help with my little brothers. And she won't miss Daddy, not one little bit. In early 1972, when I was 5 years old, my parents relocated myself and my two younger brothers from the suburbs of Mountain View, California, to the mountains of Santa Cruz, into a communal home Mother nicknamed Rancho Wombo, after a skit from the Chicken Little comedy show, which aired in the early 70s on TV in San Francisco. Our new home was a huge, isolated, mid-century ranch house at the end of a private road in the middle of a redwood forest. There were 7 bedrooms off an open-plan kitchen and living space that looked out over the trees. A veritable paradise. For us kids and the Grumps, too, our new family of friends and relatives who now lived with us. The house was to be an experiment in social living, but really it was one long party. We were all free, especially my brothers and me, the only children who lived there. We had acres of beautiful redwood forest to play in, where we made forts out of the downed tree stumps and collected neon banana slugs to keep as pets. There were occasional kids brought to the house to play with us, but often it was just the three of us, creating our own adventures. One of my favorite games was that our garden gate was a portal to another world, one in which everything was alive. We went through it, then set off across the acres. The forest creatures all had voices and spoke to us, whispering the invisible secrets of the universe. The small stones we unearthed from the rich forest floor were dinosaur eggs with magical powers to give us the powerful gifts of flying, telepathy, and time travel. After hours of playing, we would return home covered in dirt and sticks with leaves in our hair. Guitars and singing drifted from the house's wide open windows, guiding us home from our ramblings. Rancho Wombo featured its own rock and roll band, the Feltones, who practiced in a shed off the back deck. The lead singer, Fast Matt, lived with us, along with his girlfriend Annie, who dressed just like Janis Joplin, with strings of beads and rings on every finger, while their parrot Fred could say, "Roll a joint, Fred," amongst other things. The illustrator Michael Hitchcock, a.k.a. Buzzy Fishtail, came to live with us in 1973, and photographers, dope dealers, and artists wandered in and out of the house daily. My mom was in heaven. She became the high priestess of the house, reading everyone's tarot cards and casting their astrological charts by hand. This was finally the lifestyle that suited her. However, within a year, my impatient father left, not to be heard from again for 5 years. Mother always said he just couldn't stand to live somewhere where he wasn't in charge, and our commune's shared lifestyle was far from hierarchical. He left quickly, like a modern-day Odysseus, embarking on lengthy travels through the Caribbean, Mediterranean, and Atlantic as a chartering yacht captain and smuggler of contraband. Grand adventures for him, but a sad story for my mother, brothers, and me, left behind to grapple with the emotional result of abandonment, insecurity, worthlessness, and fear. In natal astrology, we begin with the moment of birth, the rise of selfhood on Earth. A natal chart is one's personal astronomy, captured or reflected as qualities in time. A pattern of archetypal energies or forces represented by the planets in our solar system and their positions and relationships to each other that a human soul enters and embodies. The planets, as they move in their orbit around the sun through the signs and degrees of the zodiac, are placed within the construct of a chart wheel. A 360-degree circle with a cross in the middle, divided into 12 natural houses or places, ruled by the 12 signs of the zodiac, which begins with the vernal equinox, the starting line of Aries season and the astrological year. To determine your own chart, you must use the exact time, date, and place of your birth. You can cast this by hand if you know how, use a computer program, or find a trusted astrologer. This is your very first statement, saying, "I am." I have Capricorn on the ascendant or rising, the first house cusp, the natural place of Aries. A first child, I was born under a full moon just 18 minutes after sunrise on December 28th, 1966. A double Capricorn coming into life soon after dawn, gifting me with the sun near my ascendant. In astrology, the sun represents part of what you are learning to become, and the rising sign is part of the style in which you get this done. Whatever day you were born, if you were born near sunrise, you will share your rising sign with the sun. According to my mother, it was a bit of a difficult birth, which isn't surprising with the planet Saturn ruling both these placements. Every sign of the zodiac has one or two planets that influence it, called rulers. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn, whose operating style is to create challenges via obstacles and restrictions to overcome, wherever he is placed in one's astrology. For this particular challenge, it seemed I was sideways in utero, and it took several tries to reposition my body head first for birth, as my mother started her labor, as well as a pair of forceps to extract my infant self from the comfort of the watery womb. An interesting exercise I've used, and recommend that you do too, is to meditate on your own moment of birth, to creatively envision the experience from your current state of being. Use anecdotes from the event if you have any from family members, or read about the energy style of your ascendant or rising, and any planets close to it for clues. Like my own example of Saturn as challenge, your nativity's astrology is synchronistic. Meaningful occurrences at birth can symbolize patterns of being and becoming throughout one's life. I've always imagined my own birth falling on a bright morning, the sun powerful in my chart reflected in a gorgeous sunrise. It's a classic California winter day with clear blue skies and a crisp, cool breeze. I imagine my mother tired but exuberant, semi-drugged in the style of the time. My father and grandparents sitting banished in the hospital's waiting room, eagerly awaiting the beginning of the next role of their own lives. Saturn always brings a sense of seriousness and responsibility to its energy. Yet I see a full moon too, visible in the morning sky, placed in the sign of Cancer, a benevolent goddess providing domestic harmony, for a time at least. The earliest photos of my life show an attractive, young, middle-class couple with a smiling infant child, happy and glowing. My Aries ascendant and Mars-ruled father stands, with his arms draped tightly across his wife and child. It's quite notable that the very first memory I have of my father is dressed as Prince Charming from Disney's Sleeping Beauty, accompanying my mother, costumed as a Native American maiden, to a Halloween party. This seemed the perfect apparel for my handsome father. He embodied everything a husband and father was supposed to be at the time: protective, loving, noble, brave. That is, until he left us. The sign of Aries is the beginning of spring, and its mode of expression is active, cardinal, as we say in astrology. It's helpful in understanding Western or tropical astrology to think of seasons as describing the zodiac or sun signs. The ancient Babylonians and Egyptians, who gave us this organizing principle, used the sun's movement across the ecliptic, the observed path of the sun around the earth. Each season, from spring through winter, contains three zodiac signs, organized in 30 degrees each, and originally named for the constellations that were visible in the sky in the early first millennia BCE. Each sign has a planet that rules it too, and an element, either water, fire, earth, or air, attached to it. The astrological signs all have a specific mode of expression energetically. Cardinal is for the beginning or active, fixed is middle or rooted, and mutable is ending or transforming or adaptive. Cardinal Aries describes the renewal of life, the thrust of growth, inspired action and initiations. Its planet is Mars and its element is fire, symbolizing inspiration and its ability to warm or burn. From a shadow perspective, Aries can also be martial, aggressive, completely reactive, self-centered, and overly competitive. Each sign of the zodiac is whole, and contains polarity points of its general archetype. In astrology, fire and air element zodiac signs have traditionally been considered to be masculine in their expression. But rather than use sexual gender, it's more helpful to use the organizing factor found in Hellenistic astrology, as the planets and signs are organized into sects of night or day, representing receptive or active tendencies. These can also be described in the Chinese terms of yin-yang. Yin, in Chinese philosophy, is a receptive force, and yang is an active one. And everything in the universe contains the forces of this balancing act within its makeup. In the tarot, a mysterious system of symbolic visual cards used for divination and spiritual contemplation, the Emperor card is linked to the sign of Aries. The card can be defined as dominant, active leadership, focusing on building empires and achieving an inspired ideal. Less than 16 months after my birth, my brother Matthew was born, smack in the middle of Aries season. With four planets in Aries, he was a young warrior with a head full of bright hair, brilliant, ungovernable, and always moving. Matt was the boy who regularly got into fights at school, later forging deep camaraderies with his opponents. He was also adventurous, competitive, martial, and very sure of himself. His favorite game was Kid Army, and his position, of course, general. Think of the knight Lancelot from King Arthur's Court, or Don Quixote from the Cervantes novel, or maybe the character of Arya from Game of Thrones as a stereotypical of Aries energy. Dedicated to their single-minded passion or inspiration as action-oriented leaders, Aries are more importantly oriented to leading themselves into directions that are inspired by their inner call. Not all Aries are necessarily overtly assertive, but wherever you have Aries, by planetary placement or your own house rulership, you'll need to be your own captain, your own knight or warrior. You'll need to be a leader brave enough to go your own way. My mom used to have little stereotypical phrases for all the astrological signs, a quick shorthand into the ironic essence of the style of the archetype. She was a practicing astrologer for as long as I can remember, and a brief cutting remark with a knowing look was all it took to relay these astro stereotypes to me, her eager student and admirer. Arrogant Aries asshole was cheerfully sing-songed into conversation whenever possible, and it was often possible with an Aries rising father, an Aries son brother, and later, my mom's Aries boyfriend Tad in the mix. She'd laugh at Aries' complete self-absorption and egoic certainty. Her own descendant, that is the cusp of the seventh house, ruling relationships, and describing what one wants from a partner, was Aries. And I know she really did crave their adventurous, active, and self-oriented focus, so different from her own balanced and refined ascendant in Libra, which was always focused on others. My own chart features the IC, the Imam Coeli, which is Latin for bottom of the sky, the fourth house cusp, as Aries 23 degrees. The IC and MC, the bottom and top of that cross, part of the angles of your chart wheel, describe your roots and wings. This can be interpreted as where you have come from, your family and foundation versus your career and direction. They can also be used to describe the parental unit and their influence on one's life, with the hidden or passive parent at the bottom and the active one at the top. It's an amazing fact that my father's ascendant conjuncts my IC exactly, and my mother's my MC. Look at your own. Could your parents be described by the qualities of the signs on the cusp of them? Do your parents, planets, or angles of their charts hit these points in your chart? My little Aries brother and I were joined by a youngest sibling in 1970, my brother Josh. Josh's birth coincided with the time of the planetoid Chiron's transit through Aries. Chiron wasn't discovered until 1977, but we can track its movements far back in time. It seems to represent both the potential and process of healing and wisdom through identifying and integrating woundedness. In Aries, Chiron expresses itself as wounds of individual identity that need to be addressed in order to heal the whole. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, great strides were made in the United States alone for civil rights. Young people, represented by Aries, organized, marched, and generally rebelled against the establishment. Tremendous social progress was made by people acting in their own self-interest, Aries, to reform the painful, Chiron, structures and processes of society. As of this writing, 50 years later, we have Chiron returning to this same place in Aries, and we're seeing similar things arising. This is one of the beauties of astrology, its ability to reflect the experience of human consciousness and behavior in all of its variety. Against the exciting backdrop of major astrological collective energies like Chiron and Aries, our Aries ascendant father and Aries descendant mother split, ostensibly so my father could pursue Aryan adventures beyond familial responsibility. As I look at the astrology of this tumultuous time in my childhood, I also see the planet Uranus, the planet of revolution, freedom, and change, at the very top of my chart by transit, conjoining my midheaven, the place of status or direction, while it opposes my Aryan-ruled fourth house of family. This kind of transit or astrological weather indicates change, freedom, revolution, something new, innovative, and possibly unstable is afoot in my life. In fact, my father's long absence created deep instability in my own foundation of security, the parental unit, as well as it activating a psychological wound that would take decades to unravel. In medical astrology, Aries rules the head. It's interesting to think that the phrase headstrong is used to describe personalities that are impulsively active and self-oriented. This accurately describes my Aries rising father. Mars is his chart ruler, and it conjoins his sun, too. Astrological Mars needs to be channeled with a mission. This is a shortcut to understanding and using its energy in your chart and life. My dad had a laser focus on where he was going next and who or what he was competing against. And where you find your Mars, you'll need to act, to have a plan or a quest to undertake. Natal Mars in a sign shows the style you'll express the energy through. My own Mars is placed in Libra, and it's the focal point of a T-square aspect in my chart, which is when two planets oppose each other at 180 degrees and that square another planet at 90 degrees. The geometric relationship between planets and our 360-degree chart wheel or circle are called aspects, and we can have these relationships with two or more planets in the chart. The Greek taught that aspects are how the planets see or don't see each other. With a T-square, the opposing planets both beam their frustrations to reconcile their difference to the planet that they're 90 degrees from. It's kind of like a built-in pressure boiler with Mars as the valve or handle that releases or contains the energy. Libra also happens to be the detriment of Mars. Domiciles and detriments or falls of planets or points in astrology originated thousands of years ago from the relationship or strength between the planets and their signs of rulership. Mars rules or has domicile in the sign of Aries, and it also co-rules Scorpio. In these zodiac signs, it expresses itself clearly and without impediment. In Aries opposition Libra, it's weaker, as it vacillates and tries to balance self-desire with the desire to please others. My Mars in Libra has been responsible for lots of frustration. I do have this need for harmony that impedes my desire to win over others, and it sometimes sublimates my own direct expression of self-assertion. Approximately every 2 years, Mars by transit returns to the place that it was when we were born. The Mars return is responsible for what's called the terrible twos, The house and sign position where you find Mars in your own chart will show how your instinctual warrior behaves. In childhood, this time can be an opportunity to discover and exercise one's own will and to find a mission to accomplish on your own. At 6 years old, and under the energetic force of my third Mars return, I found myself compelled to take charge of my mother's emotional state by taking on responsibility in my father's absence. Before her locked door, though I knew myself as a child, I attempted to release the pressure of fear, uncertainty, and loss of my father by naming myself protector. This pivotal time in my early life was when an unconscious and lifelong pattern emerged, where taking action, as represented by Mars, as well as responsibility for life events, became both a part of my defensive armor and a tool to wield in order to find emotional and physical safety. Aries, Mars, Ascendant, and First House exercises and journal prompts. If you have your chart, what zodiac sign is on your ascendant? This is your personal I am statement to others. Find it and contemplate your general style. Write a paragraph or two on what this style means to you. Creatively imagine your birth. Whether you know anything about it or not, visualize the scene in your mind. Was it day or night? What comes intuitively to you about it? Write this down in your journal. Where is Aries in your chart? Do you have planets in the sign? What house has Aries on the cusp? You'll approach this arena of life in an Arian way, as well as have experiences in life that allow you to express the archetype. Where is Mars? Do you blow up like a Mars in Aries typically? Do you seek vengeance like Mars in Scorpio, or go off on a verbal tirade like a Mars in Gemini? List your Mars by sign, house, and aspects.